Imagine clinging to the roof rack of a speeding car in the dead of night, arms screaming in pain, body battered by every pothole, all because there's no room inside for a deserter with a bullet wound in his leg. This wasn't an action movie scene. This was Louis Alsamari's reality in 1994, fleeing Saddam Hussein's Iraq with nothing but fake papers and desperation. His story isn't just about escape. It's about the impossible choices tyranny forces upon ordinary people and the price of freedom, measured in stolen money, broken laws, and family members imprisoned because you dared to survive. At 12, Louis was dropped from Manchester into Baghdad's suffocating heat. His father had lured him back in 1987 with promises of a holiday, then abandoned him to collect Saddam's 10,000 dinars for marrying war widows. The culture shock wasn't about language. It was about living where horror stories governed daily life. Four HIV-positive women burned alive, suspected prostitutes beheaded, their heads displayed for days, entire towns razed after failed assassination attempts. These weren't rumors. They were the regime's calling cards, designed to paralyze through terror. At 14, Louis dropped his Coca-Cola while staring at Uday Hussein's black Mercedes. The dictator's psychopathic son interrogated him about his Al-Samari tribe, enemies of the Hussein clan, before releasing him. That encounter crystallized what every Iraqi knew. Your life could end for catching the wrong person's attention. His father forced him into the College of Forestry and Agriculture near Mosul, surrounded by Saddam loyalists. His 86% exam score fell short of medical school, those extra points reserved for Ba'ath Party children. His father sabotaged exit permits. Conscription became inevitable. The Baghdad Military Training Center loomed with Saddam's portrait staring down like an omniscient god. Assigned to Al-Amara near the Iranian border, Louis learned to plant the same landmines that had killed his uncle Saad during the Iran-Iraq War. He mastered machine guns, tank-mounted weapons, grenades. Most chilling was interrogation training, ordered to extract information from a bound fellow soldier, whipped with a cane when his blows proved too gentle. Cruelty wasn't optional, it was curriculum. Transfer to Al-Mansur Military Intelligence Compound meant joining Saddam's terror machine and permanent entrapment. Desertion would cost not just Louis's life, but visit horrors upon his entire family. When he questioned the assignment, his commanding officer threatened to report him for rejecting the government's generosity. Monthly leave became his only lifeline. 6 hours of travel for 5 days at his mother's house. Being even an hour late meant losing a day from his next leave. Control extended into every corner of existence, measuring freedom in hours. Desperation breeds recklessness. During one leave attempt, a Red Beret guard accused Louis of forging papers and threw him in a filthy cell for a week, despite his documents being genuine. Released with barely any leave remaining, he stole a robe to disguise himself and boarded a bus. The plan collapsed when another passenger demanded his seat, revealing army boots beneath the robe. Beaten and returned to his unit, he faced Captain Taha with a fabricated story. Taha reduced his punishment to 3 days solitary instead of 3 months, but canceled all future leave. Those 3 days gave Louis time to plan. He knew guards would least expect another attempt immediately after release. After showering, he doctored his old leave papers, stole pliers from the workshop, and that night cut through the perimeter fence. Machine gun fire erupted. A bullet struck his leg. Crawling toward abandoned vehicles in excruciating pain, he flagged down a taxi. The elderly driver took him to a village doctor who recognized the gunshot wound. Working in the taxi's back seat, the doctor used calipers to extract the bullet, the pain 10 times worse than being shot. The driver helped him pass checkpoints with altered leave papers, feigning illness. When they reached his grandparents' house in Baghdad, Louis paid his last money and the driver disappeared. Uncle Saad arrived with documents, a passport with an exit stamp to Jordan, and a fake military absence card. These would get Lewis through internal checkpoints, but not across the border. The solution lay with the Al-Shamari, a powerful Bedouin tribe who'd been crossing between Iraq and Jordan for centuries. When Lewis worried about corrupt checkpoint guards, Saad revealed his special-issue Beretta, a medal winner's gift from Saddam that commanded respect. At the checkpoint, when a red beret examined Lewis's fake military pass too carefully, Saad diffused tension with humor. "Are you looking to buy one?" In a small Bedouin village, they found Abu Mustafa, an imposing figure with thick white mustache, wearing a black robe. After customary tea, Saad explained Lewis had deserted and needed passage to Jordan. Their goodbye was heart-wrenching. Saad gave Lewis contact information for his friend Wissam in Amman and a black Beretta for protection. His final words haunted. "Remember, the genuine man never forgets his family. We are sending you to freedom so that one day you may rescue them from this place." As night fell, Abu Mustafa and relatives arrived with rifles. They set off into silent desert, four Bedouin tribesmen, Lewis, and seven sheep as cover. The desert's darkness was broken only by moonlight as the Bedouin navigated using distant village lights and compass checks. Wolf howls echoed from both sides. Warning shots temporarily scattered them. When patrol vehicle lights approached, Lewis busied himself with sheep while Abu Mustafa smoothly handled the suspicious border guards, claiming they were trading livestock. After the guards left, they continued another hour until reaching the Amman Road, where the guides left Lewis to continue alone. That's when terror consumed him, the moment from the opening of the story. Wolves attacked from both sides. He fired blindly into darkness, hitting at least one animal. The others, distracted by easier meat, began feeding on their injured packmates while Lewis ran toward the road, his leg wound reopening, vomiting from fear. After 45 minutes of desperate flight, he reached the highway and collapsed. A white border control vehicle stopped. Voices swirled around him. He managed to rasp, "I need to get to Amman," before darkness took him. Regaining consciousness roadside, he begged his rescuers not to return him to the border. A family of travelers had stopped, their car already packed with children. Lewis fabricated a story about carjackers stealing his vehicle and papers. The compassionate woman offered water and food while the reluctant driver complained about lack of space. Desperate, Lewis volunteered to cling to the roof rack. For nearly an hour, he held on to the speeding car, arms aching, body battered by every bump, a price he paid gladly for each kilometer of distance from Iraq. In Amman, Lewis's fake passport had a six-month limit. When police exposed his illegal status, a smuggler named Abu Firas outlined the escape route. Reach Malaysia, where officials wouldn't scrutinize passports, then use Western contacts for fake documents to enter the UK. Lewis reached England and claimed asylum. Meeting Uncle Faisal in Leeds, a hero unseen since age six, fulfilled his journey. He married Rachel, their Jewish and Arab backgrounds creating a harmonious symbol. Then a chilling letter arrived. Saad had been brutally interrogated, his family imprisoned in Al-Hakimiyah. Unless Lewis returned, they'd remain imprisoned indefinitely. Desperate, he stole $37,500 to arrange smugglers and fake passports. His family reached Jordan, but officials discovered their forged documents. Deported to Iraq, they faced 3 years each in Abu Ghraib. Lewis's arrest for fraud created unbearable pressure, but the judge recognized his unique mitigation and suspended his sentence. Despite this, MPs refused family reunion. Lewis reluctantly returned to people trafficking until his mother and brother finally reached Britain. Seeing his mother on British soil, her face transformed, anxiety lifted, was the happiest moment of his life. Having earned a law degree, his conviction barred him from practice. He turned to acting, studying at Lambda. In 2006, he appeared in United 93, but was denied a visa to attend its New York premiere. The irony stung. Bush and Blair broke international law invading Iraq, while he broke laws to save his family, yet only he faced punishment. As the Arabic saying goes, "Every day of your life is a page of your history." Lewis can now write those pages himself. Freedom isn't just the absence of tyranny. It's the ability to honor those who sacrificed for you and to remember that the genuine man never forgets his family.